Chapter 51. Modesty. If I could get over this difficulty, I should like to join, for I approve highly of the club and its object. It ought to be given an annual dinner at the public expense. If you think I am not too modest, you may put my name down, and I will try to think the same of you. Mrs. Howells applauded the notion of the club from the very first. She said that she knew one thing, that she was modest enough, anyway. Her manner of saying it implied that the other persons you had named were not, and created a painful impression in my mind. I have sent your letter and the rules to A, but I doubt his modesty. He will think he has a right to belong to it as much as you or I, whereas other people ought only to be admitted on sufferance. Our next letter to Howells is, in the main, pure foolery, but we get in it a hint what was to become in time one of Mask Twain's strongest interests, the matter of copyright. He had both a personal and general interest in the subject. His own books were constantly pirated in Canada, and the rights of foreign authors were not respected in America. We have already seen how he had drawn a petition which Holmes, Lowell, Longfellow, and others were to sign, and while nothing had come of this plan, he had never ceased to formulate others. Yet he hesitated when he found that the proposed protection was likely to work a hardship to readers of the poorer class. Once he wrote, "My notions have mightily changed lately. I can buy a lot of the copyright classics, in paper, at from 3 to 30 cents a piece. These things must find their way into the very kitchens and hovels of the country. And even if the treaty will kill Canadian piracy, and thus save me an average of $5,000 a year, I am down on it anyway, and I'd like Custwell to write an article opposing the treaty. To W. D. Howells, in Belmont, Mass. Thursday, June 6, 1880. My dear Howells, there you stick, at Belmont, and now I'm going to Washington for a few days, and of course, between you and Providence, that visit is going to get mixed, and you'll have been here and gone again just about the time I get back. Bother it all, I wanted to astonish you with a chapter or two from Orion's latest book, not the 17 which he has begun in the last 4 months, but the one which he began last week. Last night, when I went to bed, Mrs. Clemens said, George didn't take the cat down to the cellar. Rosa says he has left it shut up in the conservatory. So I went down to attend to Abner the cat. About 3 in the morning Mrs. 100 woke me and said, I do believe I hear that cat in the drawing room. What did you do with him? I answered up with the confidence of a man who has managed to do the right thing for once, and said, opened the conservatory doors, took the library off the alarm, and spread everything open, so that there wasn't any obstruction between him and the cellar. Language wasn't capable of conveying this woman's disgust. But the sense of what she said was, he couldn't have done any harm in the conservatory, so you must go and make the entire house free to him and the burglars, imagining that he will prefer the coal bins to the drawing room. If you had had Mr. Howells to help you, I should have admired, but not been astonished, because I should know that together you would be equal to it. But how you managed to contrive such a stately blunder all by yourself is what I cannot understand. So, you see, even she knows how to appreciate our gifts. Brisk times here. Saturday, these things happened. Our neighbor Chas Smith was stricken with heart disease, and came near joining the majority. My publisher, Bliss, ditto, a neighbor's child died. Neighbor Whitmore's sixth child added to his 5 other cases of measles. Neighbor Niles sent for, and responded, Susie Warner down, abed. Mrs. George Warner threatened with death during several hours. Her son Frank, whilst imitating the marvels in Barnum's circus bills, thrown from his aged horse and brought home insensible. Warner's friend Max Yortzberg, shot in the back by a locomotive, and broken into 32 distinct pieces and his life threatened. And Mrs. Clemens, after writing all these cheerful things to Clara Spalding, taken at midnight, and if the doctor had not been pretty prompt, the contemplated Clemens would have called before his apartments were ready. However, everybody is all right now, except Yortzberg, and he is mending, that is, he is being mended. I knocked off during these stirring times, and don't intend to go to work again till we go away for the summer, 3 or 6 weeks hence. So I am writing to you, not because I have anything to say, but because you don't have to answer, and I need something to do this afternoon. I have a letter from a congressman this morning, and he says Congress couldn't be persuaded to bother about Canadian pirates at a time like this, when all legislation must have a political and presidential bearing, else Congress won't look at it. So I've changed my mind and my course. I go north to kill a pirate. I must procure a post some way, else I cannot get down to work again. Pray offer my most sincere and respectful approval to the President. Is approval the proper word? I find it is the one I most value here in the household and seldomest get. With our affection to you both. Ears ever, Mark. It was always dangerous to send strangers with letters of introduction to Mark Twain. They were so apt to arrive at the wrong time, or to find him in the wrong mood. Howells was willing to risk it, and that the result was only amusing instead of tragic is the best proof of their friendship. To W.D. Howells, in Belmont, Mass. June 9, 1980. Well, old practical joker, the corpse of Mr. Ten has been here, and I have bedded it and fed it, and put down my work during 24 hours, and tried my level best to make it do something, or say something, or appreciate something, but no, it was worse than Lazarus. A kind-hearted, well-meaning corpse was the Boston young man, but lossy bless me, horribly dull company. Now, old man, unless you have great confidence in Mr. X's judgment, you ought to make him submit his article to you before he prints it. For only think how true I was to you. Every hour that he was here I was saying, gloatingly, OGD-U, when you are in bed and your light out, I will fix you, meaning to kill him, dot, but then the thought would follow, no, Howell sent him, he shall be spared, he shall be respected, he shall travel hellwards by his own route. Breakfast is frozen by this time, and Mrs. Clemens correspondingly hot. Goodbye. Ears ever, Mark. Did not expect you to ask that man to live with you, Howells answered. Had I was afraid of was that you would turn him out of doors, on sight, and so I tried to put in a good word for him. After this when I want you to board people, I'll ask you. I am sorry for your suffering. I suppose I have mostly lost my smell for bores, but yours is preternaturally keen. I shall begin to be afraid I bore you. How does that make you feel? In a letter to Twitchell, a remarkable letter when baby John Clemens was about a month old, we get a happy hint of conditions at Quarry Farm, and in the background a glimpse of Mark Twain's unfailing tragic reflection. To Rev. Twitchell, in Hartford. Quarry Farm, August 29, 80. Dear old Joe, concerning John Clemens, if anybody said he didn't see no pints about that frog that's any better than any other frog, I should think he was convicting himself of being a pretty poor sort of observer. I will not go into details, it is not necessary. You will soon be in Hartford, where I have already hired a hall. The admission fee will be but a trifle. It is curious to note the change in the stock quotation of the affection board brought about by throwing this new security on the market. 4 weeks ago the children still put Mama at the head of the list right along, whereas he had always been. But now, John Mama Motley a cat, Fräulein another, Papa, that is the way it stands. Now Mama's become number 2, I have dropped from number 4, and am become number 5. Some time ago it used to be nip and tuck between me and the cats, but after the cats developed I didn't stand any more show. I've got a swollen ear, so I take advantage of it to lie abed most of the day, and read and smoke and scribble, and have a good time. Last evening Livy said with deep concern, "Oh dear, I believe an abscess is forming in your ear." I responded as the poet would have done, "If he had had a cold in the head," I said, "that abscess conquers love, but oh believe it not." This made a coolness. Been reading Daniel Webster's private correspondence. Have read 100 of his diffuse, conceited, eloquent, bathotic or bathostic, letters written in that dim, no, vanished, past when he was a student. And Lord, to think that this boy who is so real to me now, and so booming with fresh young blood and bountiful life, and sappy cynicisms about girls, has since climbed the Alps of fame, and stood against the sun one brief tremendous moment with the world's eyes upon him, and then FZT-. Where is he? Why, the only long thing, the only real thing about the whole shadowy business is the sense of the lagging dull and hoary lapse of time that has drifted by since then. A vast empty level, it seems, with a formless specter glimpsed fitfully through the smoke and mist that lie along its remote verge. Well, we are all getting along here first rate. Livy gains strength daily, and sits up a deal. The baby is 5 weeks old, and, but no more of this. Somebody may be reading this letter 80 years hence. And so, my friend, you pitying snob, I mean, who are holding this yellow paper in your hand in 1960, save yourself the trouble of looking further. I know how pathetically trivial our small concerns will seem to you, and I will not let your eye profane them. No, I keep my news. You keep your compassion. Suffice it you to know, scoffer and ribald, that the little child is old and blind now, and once more toothless. And the rest of us are shadows, these many, many years. Yes, and your time cometh. Mark. At the farm, that year Mark Twain was working on The Prince and the Pauper, and, according to a letter to Aldrich, brought it to an end September 19th. It is a pleasant letter, worth preserving. The book by Aldrich here mentioned was the Stillwater Tragedy. To T.B. Aldrich, in Ponkapog, Mass. Elmira, September 15, 80. My dear Aldrich, thank you ever so much for the book. I had already finished it, and prodigiously enjoyed it, in the periodical of the Notorious Owls, but it hits Mrs. Clemens just right, for she is having a reading holiday now, for the first time in same months. So between dash times, when the new baby is asleep, and strengthening up for another attempt to take possession of this place, she is going to read it. Her strong friendship for you makes her think she is going to like it. I finished a story yesterday, myself. I counted up, and found it between 60,000 and 80,000 words, about the size of your book. It is for boys and girls, been at work at it several years, off and on. I hope Owls is enjoying his journey to the Pacific. He wrote me that you and Osgood were going, also, but I doubted it, believing he was in liquor when he wrote it. In my opinion, this universal applause over his book is going to land that man in a retreat inside of 2 months. I notice the papers say mighty fine things about your book too. You ought to try to get into the same establishment with Owls. But applause does not affect me. I am always calm. This is because I am used to it. Well, goodbye, my boy, and good luck to you. Mrs. Clemens asks me to send her warmest regards to you, and Mrs. Aldrich, which I do, and add those of yours ever, Mark. While Mark Twain was a journalist in San Francisco, there was a middle-aged man named Sowell, who had a desk near him on the morning call. Sowell was in those days highly considered as a poet by his associates, most of whom were younger and less gracefully poetic. But Sowell's gift had never been an important one. Now, in his old age, he found his fame still local, and he yearned for wider recognition. He wished to have a volume of poems issued by a publisher of recognized standing. Because Mark Twain had been one of Sowell's admirers, and a warm friend in the old days, it was natural that Sowell should turn to him now, and equally natural that Clemens should turn to Owls. To W.D. Owls, in Boston. Sunday, October 2nd, 80. My dear Owls, here's a letter which I wrote you to San Francisco the second time you didn't go there. I told Saul he needn't write you, but simply send TMS to you. Oh dear, dear, it is dreadful to be an unrecognized poet. How wise it was in Charles Warren Stoddard to take in his sign and go for some other calling while still young. I'm laying for that encyclopedical Scotchman, and he'll need to lock the door behind him when he comes in. Otherwise, when he hears my proposed tariff, his skin will probably crawl away with him. He is accustomed to seeing the publisher impoverish the author. That spectacle must be getting stale to him. If he contracts with the undersigned, he will experience a change in that program that will make the enamel peel off his teeth for very surprise and joy. No, that last is what Mrs. Clemens thinks, but it's not so. The proposed work is growing, mightily, in my estimation, day by day, and I'm not going to throw it away for any mere trifle. If I make a contract with the canny Scot, I will then tell him the plan which you and I have devised, that of taking in the humor of all countries. Otherwise I'll keep it to myself, I think. Why should we assist our fellow men for mere love of God? Ears ever mark. One wishes that Owls might have found value enough in the verses of Frank Saul to recommend them to Osgood. To Clemens he wrote, "Who have touched me in regard to him, and I will deal gently with his poetry. Poor old fellow! I can imagine him, and how he must have to struggle not to be hard or sour." The verdict, however, was inevitable. Saul's graceful verses proved to be not poetry at all. No publisher of standing could afford to give them his imprint. The encyclopedical Scotchman mentioned in the preceding letter was the publisher Jebby, who had a plan to engage Owls and Clemens to prepare some sort of anthology of the world's literature. The idea came to nothing, though the other plan mentioned for a library of humor in time grew into a book. Mark Twain's contracts with Bliss for the publication of his books on the subscription plan had been made on a royalty basis, beginning Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.